Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, December 12th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Melody. Happy National CPI Day.
Oh, yeah. What a thing to celebrate.
Oh, my God. Well, more importantly, it's also National Gingerbread House Day.
That's a little better.
Yeah, a little better. December 12th recognizes that family tradition for so many of us around the country, a favorite food of an Armenian monk, Gregory of Nicopolis. Brought gingerbread to Europe around the year 992 and taught French Christians how to bake it. But we can thank the brothers Grimm for the gingerbread house through their tale of Hansel and Gretel. Remember that one? They introduced that evil witch who lives in a house made of gingerbread. Well, it didn't take long for the gingerbread German guilds to pick up the idea, and soon they put gingerbread houses to a more festive use during the holidays, making snowy cottages made of that spicy, sweet treat. So today we can spend the day baking, cutting, and building to our heart's delight. Well, we're building our gingerbread houses with our grandsons on Friday.
On Friday, huh?
There you go. That's
Yeah. Ooh, take pictures.
Absolutely.
Take a picture. You know, it just figures it takes, you know, here you have a monk, an Armenian monk who teaches how to make gingerbread to the French Christians, and then you have someone like the brothers Grimm turn it into something evil. You know?
Human nature.
You know? It never fails to amaze me.
We've had poor self-esteem dating back to the beginning of time.
Oh, good grief. Oh, my. Evil, you mean. Just downright evil. But anyway, let's go ahead and see what the evil has done to gold today. It was higher this morning, but we're 1980, so we're holding that level down $2 today. Silver, $22.86, down 5 pennies. But it's interesting, platinum and palladium were higher. Platinum was up $19.940. Palladium was up $18. At 1,004. The USDX today was down 0.26 at 103.82. Crude oil got a beating today, down below 70, 68.73 down $2.50. And I'm sure there's nothing wrong with the paper markets. So, of course not. Stocks closed higher for the fourth day. S&P touches the highest levels since 2022. And the NASDAQ, it's just up 100 points. So there you have it. The Dow is up 173, S&P up 21, and the NASDAQ up 100. But the Dow was up 173, but it was only a half a percent, so that's really no big deal. European markets were all negative across the board, just a couple points each. Asian markets were positive. The Hang Seng was up over 1%. 10-year yield, 4.20. That's lower. And I'll betcha natural gas is lower, too. You betcha, 5.75%, 2.291. Yes, those shorts are making tons of money there. And we saw U.S. crude oil fall nearly 4%. As traders worry about inflation impacting demand. Really? Seriously? I find that hard to believe. But we do get a, let's see if I'm at the right. Yeah, before we talk about the CPI that came out today, we'll talk a little bit about that here shortly. But there is a Fed statement tomorrow. You know, they're not going to adjust rates. They're going to be holding, I would think. If you're a betting person, then go bet on it. But he's not going to change. The official party line spelled out in a speech by Powell 10 days ago is that further tightening is still on the table, and it is too soon to even speculate about rate cuts. Yeah, he's not going to do a rate cut, but markets are pricing in no more rate hikes, and they're looking for easing next year. So funny. There's really, in September, the median Fed official anticipated the rates would still be at 5.1% at the end of next year, implying only one rate cut in all of 2024. And that's now far out of whack with market expectations, which currently are pricing in around 5 basis point rate cuts next year, 25 basis, five of them. Good luck, guys.
Yes, good luck. I mean, the big question actually about tomorrow, I mean, I think it's the only question, is when the new Fed projections are released, is how wide that gap remains, gap between where we are and, you know, when they'll start cutting, revealing how open the Fed is to, you know, a pivot. Also worth watching is the language in their policy statement. In recent meetings, it's mentioned factors for determining the extent of additional policy firming that's needed, and to quote them in Fed speak, that implies that rates could go higher, but not lower anytime soon, based at least on current information. Now, the change to reflect a more two-sided range of possibilities would signal greater openness to rate cuts. But look, they're not going to do it until the spring. unless something incredibly drastic happens, which I don't expect it to. And besides, the Fed has these fairly not so transparent loan vehicles that they can have their too big to fail banks tap into if they feel a need. I mean, we'll talk more about that in the third segment today. I mean, TD Securities analysts say that Powell's going to have to walk a fine line by recognizing the ground that's been gained towards, quote, normalization of the economy, while at the same time pushing back on the idea that the Fed's mission has been accomplished, God forbid.
Well, my question is, why would they even think of lowering rates if the stock market's contained to be okay? That's the only reason they would lower them. Why wouldn't they keep everything as is? If everything is functioning as is, why would you do anything about it?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, their biggest fear has been the R word, a recession. And you know, jobs numbers are coming in better than was expected certainly closer to a year ago, even 6 months ago. Really, aside from the housing industry, which is very reliant on moderate interest rates. I agree with you. I think they're going to find little reason to start cutting anytime soon. The other piece of it we haven't mentioned is, of course, the part of the equation, and that's all the selling of their treasury and mortgage-backed securities that's been on their balance sheet for the last couple of years. So as they keep rolling them off, that's probably another reason why things on the rate front are going to be quiet over the next couple of meetings.
Well, today, on Friday, we talked about how the consumer inflation expectations kind of dropped. And so we had the median consumer expectation inflation to be 3.4% in November. Now, this was the lowest reading since April of 2021. Over the next 3 years, consumers anticipate inflation will be 3%, unchanged from the prior month. And hey, Dave, it sounds like the battle against inflation has been won. But then if my question is, then how comes none of the prices are going lower? Does that come later?
No, that comes later. That would be that so-called effect.
It comes later, in a different lifetime.
Yeah. Hey. Well, if you're 39, us.
Well, yeah, I do have moments.
Anyway, sorry about that. The Fed's been worrying that consumers would continue to expect the rising prices. And at least as far as the past goes, that would make inflation more difficult to beat. But that's not the case. Excuse me. The New York Fed survey shows these inflation fears abating, surprisingly, in my mind, alongside mixed expectations about what's ahead for the labor market. Expectations that the unemployment rate will be higher a year from now fell again by 0.2 percentage point, 38.4% expected to be higher, implying that the other 61-62% don't. But jitters over losing one's job over the next year leaped higher by almost 1 full percentage point. Consumers also expect company earnings growth to slow in the year ahead, but presumably not so much as to have a hard landing in recession area. Stay tuned to Financial Survival to see how things turn out.
Well, okay. Well, the American labor market has entered a new phase, and this is all according to ADP, but they're always so wrong. They're never in tune with the government numbers. But anyway, two huge trends that define the recovery: rapid job growth and massive pay gains for these job switchers, they're saying, are over. The firm's latest employment report last week showed moderating private sector job growth and slowing pay gains, the latest indication that the job market is transitioning to something a little more reminiscent of pre-pandemic times. Friday's official government report showing the addition of 199,000 jobs in November. And of course, the leisure and hospitality sector, hotels, restaurants, bars. That was pretty much the labor market recovery. And that's no longer the case in ADP's data. The sector shed 7,000 workers. And that was the first contraction in 2 years, Dave. So,
Their chief economist, ADP's chief, Neil Richardson, said that last week's ADP report marks the end of an era when it comes to the labor market recovery. She added, what we saw over the two-year recovery, mainly the rehiring of low-paid workforce tied to leisure and hospitality, is no longer dominant. And just as important, the report also showed that these job switcher pay gains are falling closer to that of what they call job stayers. Stayers. The sign of the so-called great resignation boom, when workers left old jobs in search of higher pay, is waning. Bottom line, Richardson says, we have to remember what solid monthly job growth looks like in the U.S. economy. It's been 3 years of something extraordinary. Now we're getting something more modest. That leads, Melody.
Yes, and CPI day. Prices, yeah, today. Oh, today, yes. Prices across a broad range of goods and services edged slightly higher in November. But, you know, it was pretty much what everyone was expecting. The CPI increased 0.1% in November, and that's up 3.1% from a year ago. And the monthly rate indicated a pickup from the flat CPI reading that was in October, but the annual rate showed yet another decline. But if you exclude that old food and energy prices, very volatile, the core CPI increased 0.3% on the month and 4% from a year ago. So the November numbers are still over 50% above the Fed's 2% target. So we'll just have to see how long it takes. Lizanne Saunders, chief investment strategist at Schwab, Charles Schwab. So the report was somewhat in line, although I suppose not as good as what some might have hoped, that we would start to see more deceleration on a monthly basis. She also added that the Fed will probably talk about continued disinflation being good news. Depends. Depends on what side you're on. But anyway, a 2.3% decrease in energy prices helped keep inflation in check. And you know what? Gasoline fell 6% and fuel oil was off 2.7%. So,
yeah, hey, good for those homeowners who heat their homes with oil. But hey, food prices increased again, boosted by a 0.4% jump in food away from home. That's for those of you who eat out. On an annualized basis, food rose just about 3%, while energy was down almost 5.5%. Shelter prices, on the other hand, which make up about a third of the CPI, increased 0.4% on the month and were up 6.5% on an annual basis. However, the annual rate has shown a steady decline since peaking in early 2023. Lodging away from home, that is, at hotels and what have you, fell 0.9%. Now, Lisa Sturtevant, who's the chief economist at Bright MLS, cautioned that falling inflation doesn't mean that prices are falling. In fact, she said prices for just about everything are still higher than they were before the pandemic. It's just that they're rising more slowly than before. She said housing costs in particular continue to weigh on many individuals and families. Now, interestingly, Melody, after falling for five straight months, used vehicle prices jumped up again at 1.6% in the month, and vehicle insurance increased 1%, up 19% year over year. Jeez. Medical care costs rose 0.6%, and clothing fell 1.3%. But where the rubber meets the road, worker paychecks increased on an inflation-adjusted basis, with real average hourly earnings rising 0.8%, from 1 year ago. EPI day, almost over for another month.
Yeah, how about that? Well, you know, here we talk about China falling into a deflationary funk. You know, their prices are falling. My question is, since, I mean, yes, they have their own economy, but we're their biggest buyer of product, correct?
We are.
So if they're having deflation problems, that would come from partially our purchasing things from them, correct?
Well, so Some of it, they don't break it down. Like, you know, what percentage of or what part of this contract contraction was from their exports.
Hey, I hear the music. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A beautiful sight. We're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along. Walking in a winter wonderland.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blixen and all his reindeers pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. So hang your stockings and say your prayers, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane.
Santa Claus. Hey, you're listening to Financial Survival, 1-800-375-4188 for Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188 for Discount Gold and Silver Trading and visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Excuse me, you can now purchase your 2024 1-ounce American Silver Eagles, but they're not going to be delivered until, well, we'll get them shipped down about the second week of January. So you'll be getting them in the third week. Yeah, well, the government doesn't release them till the first week. They have a special day they have to release them on. And then by the time they get to the wholesalers and by the time they get to us, you're looking about the second week, and we'll get them out to you. So, like I said, you could purchase 2024s, 2 months ago, but you wouldn't get, you still wouldn't get them any sooner than January. So why buy them if you're looking to buy Silver Eagles? Why tie up your money, excuse me, for that long? So
how are the premiums these days for silver?
They're coming. Everything's coming down. Mm-hmm. Everything's coming down. So, I think 1 ounce American Silver Eagles are running around $28. So it's a pretty good deal. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. So I think we were finished with that about China.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything
earth-shattering
there.
So, actually, there hasn't been any earth-shattering news this week. I mean, it's only Tuesday, but news is just not there. I don't know if you found that, Dave.
More and more of, particularly the mainstream media sites, just preoccupied with news and discussion about the Trump trials and the elections, and it's with the Iowa caucuses just a couple weeks away, followed by the New Hampshire primary. I think we're going to start seeing more and more of that. Now, maybe tomorrow will be a different story, or at least Thursday after Fed comes out with its already known rate decision. Maybe we'll see a really big jump in gold and silver prices.
Well, I guess I'm not sure if the... Well, it looks like, I don't know if Biden's going to get, or I should say Ukraine is going to get his money again.
I don't know. It's been a tough sell on Capitol Hill today.
Should be.
From what I've been seeing.
It should be.
Well, I disagree with you.
I know you do.
It shouldn't be an easy sell. And I frankly... don't mind if funding for Ukraine and Israel is tied to doing something significant about what's going on in our southern borders, which may be somewhat of a surprise to you. But I think well past the time for us to focus where things need to be focused.
Well, the big thing is, and I mean, this is a debate, where I'm not here to debate, but my biggest question is, you know what? If they want money, I want to see accountability. I want to see where it goes and what it's being spent on. You have no idea how much is going into the coffers of Ukraine, since Ukraine was one of the most corrupt nations in the world. I can't imagine the corruption just goes away overnight or during a war. You probably have more corruption going on. So, you know, we just can't keep dishing out billions and billions and billions of dollars with no accountability. We've given them all kinds of weapons. They're using down our stockpiles of stuff, for lack of a better military term, for weapons and so forth. So, you know, come
Don't
up with that first.
With that either.
Come up with that first. Then we'll talk about additional funds. And let's pay attention to, you know, what's happening in this country, too. You know, I think there's a lot of funds. And, yeah, that $2.1 trillion infrastructure package or inflation fighting package, you know, is not being used to the best of, you know. So there's just so many problems. And it's just like, you know, it's just and nobody even talks about it. Nobody even suggests it. I mean, fight for the border is one thing. I mean, if anybody can't agree that we have a major issue at this border, the southern border of all of our borders, north and south, you have to be asleep. So, you know, it's just, I don't know. What's wrong with helping the United? What's wrong with helping the city? What's wrong with defending our country first? I don't get, but anyway. So there's a lot of people out there who talk about the Fed took so long to do anything. I mean, we had a 5% annual growth last quarter. I find that hard to believe. But anyway, despite the 5.5 benchmark federal funds interest rate set by the Fed to this point, Fed policymakers expect their interest rate decisions to eventually slow that growth. Well, it was slowed prior to that quarter. So I don't know what happened to that quarter, but the increase in borrowing costs that stems from the Fed's decisions does not affect all consumers immediately. And there is a lagging effect. It typically affects people who need to take new loans, first-time home buyers, for example. Some other dynamics like the use of contracts in business, that can also slow the ripple of Fed's decision through the economy. And Sarah House, she's an economist at the too big to fail Wells Fargo Bank, and I guess now they're in. I think you're going to talk about the banks and the trouble that they're in, aren't you, in the third segment?
Yeah.
With probably Wells Fargo being the one of the leading.
They're up there.
They're up there. I just can't, along with Deutsche Bank. Look at all the problems Deutsche Bank has. Bail them out. Bail them out. Wells Fargo, look at all the things they had. All they do is pay fines. You had one or two scapegoats that were the lower echelon people of the Wells Fargo, and everybody else goes untouched. So it's going to keep happening until these people are thrown in jail. So fines, when it's paid by the bank or the insurance companies, it doesn't do anything to stop the fraud. And but this economist, Sarah House, said it might not all hit at once, but the longer rates stay elevated, the more you're going to feel these effects. Consumers did an additional savings that we wouldn't have expected if they had continued to save at the same pre-COVID rate. So, Dave?
Yeah, well, excuse me. We know that interest rate increases can reduce and tend to reduce GDP over time. According to the San Francisco Fed, a 1% interest rate hike will increase, 1% interest rate hike can reduce GDP by up to 5% for 12 years after an unexpected hike. I think something just as relevant, if not more, is that the Congressional Budget Office estimates that if interest rates were just 1/10 of a percentage point higher each year, federal budget deficits would increase by over $300 billion over a 10-year period. Former CBO director Doug Holt-Eakin, who's now president of the American Action Forum, said it's bad in the short term because we worry about unemployment and recessions. It's bad in the long term because that's where increases in your wages come from. So we want to be more productive. Now, some economists say that financial markets may be responding to Fed policy more quickly, if not, well, instantaneous. Fed Governor Christopher Waller remarked that a policy tightening occurs with the announcement of policy tightening, not when the rate change actually happens. Roger Ferguson, who's a former vice chair of the Fed, added, "We've seen this cycle where the stock market moved more quickly in some cases, more slowly in others." So this question of variability comes into play, as in how long it's going to take. We think it's a long, we meaning Roger Ferguson, says he thinks it's going to take a long time, but sometimes it can be faster. I mean, come on, Melody, how's that for Fed speak? oh my, give us some straight answers, please.
Well, they don't have straight answers. That's why they can't give them to us.
It's part of a symptom of a lot of the problem with public officials these days is that no one has the gumption to talk straight with us. I mean, don't be so gosh darn afraid society in general has become more, part of the problem, particularly social media, where statements are, they're not taken out of context, they're just overblown. And I think, just people around the world, especially here in America, have just become a little gun shy. Afraid of being criticized. But look, when it comes to, especially if you're an elected leader, quote unquote, you got to be willing to stand your ground and say what we at Pure Financial Survival believe in, that you got to tell the people what you think they need to hear, not what you think they want to hear. And we still have far too little of that, Melody. Perhaps not on this program. We try to be a little more straightforward and truthful. And speaking of straightforward and truthful, this next story about political ad spending. Oh, my gosh.
You know, that this is part of the problem. You know, how hard is it to fix Well, it's obviously very hard when you see who's in D.C., but, you know, we got these Iowa presidential caucuses. It's just a few weeks away. Congressional elections 11 months away, presidential 11 months away, and these political ads are just dominating TV and other types of media. So it's interesting to see that the political ads in the U.S. next year could be bigger than the entire Australian advertising market combined. Can you believe that? I mean, when you think about it, it's a stunning stat that makes clear that, you know, the staggering ad blitz for the 2024 elections, it's just
already out of hand. Jeez.
Yeah, it is. Group M, this new projections, they're one of the world's largest paid advertising agencies, suggest that the political ad revenue will reach $15 billion in 2024, $17 billion including direct mail. That includes spending from political action committees and advocacy groups. Political groups and campaigns down the ballot, or if they're beginning to spend earlier than they have in previous election cycles. New digital advertising formats such as streaming have created more places for campaigns to spend. Connected TV advertising, or CTV for short, is one of the fastest growing segment for political ads.
Yeah, these CTV ads are video ads that run on digital TV sets that are connected to the internet, supposedly offering campaigns the ability to target their ads more narrowly to voters with certain interests beyond targeting just to age and gender demographics. If you're wondering why you're getting emails and now texts, sometimes 5, 6, 7 texts every single day, you can thank these CTV ads largely and how they're more narrowly focusing on you. Now, the phase out of internet tracking cookies is forcing these campaigns to rely more heavily on digital formats, you know, like streaming, keyword searches, and podcasts. 4 years ago, political ads generated revenue of just $9 billion, about $6.5 billion during the 2016 presidential congressional election cycle. And now they're talking about 17, doubling in just 4 years. Crazy. Now, 2024 presidential election, they say, is going to differ from the past in this crucial way. Guess what? The use or increased usage of generative artificial intelligence by advertisers, which again is raising concerns over misinformation and election manipulation, regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on politically. Earlier this month, the Facebook parent Meta, buddy Mark Zuckerberg, announced that it would require advertisers to reveal whether their political ads on its platforms have any AI-generated or digitally altered content. Still not sure how that's going to help any of us by just them knowing that. Their move followed a similar announcement by Google 2 months earlier. Get ready, ladies and gentlemen. This advertising blitz is just going to get crazier and crazier as the year goes on. Just a real quick aside before we go on to the next one. This past election cycle, all local elections, you know, city council, school board, what have you, Melody, I bet you no less than 75 to 80% of mail that was delivered to our house the last month before the November election were political, you know, campaign literature. Just nuts.
Who pays attention to it and who sends money? That's what I want to know. But you know, what's interesting is, you know, it wasn't that long ago where we talked about how there was a law passed. I think it was Argentina maybe that was written by AI. and it got passed, it got approved, it still has to get final approval and so forth. So I'm not quite sure if they, but there was even a lawmaker up in New Hampshire, I believe, who was using AI to create. So it's like these politicians, they can be complete duds and allow AI to write. And you don't even know if it's their real face that you're watching on some of these commercials and talking.
One late night talk host just said last week that George Santos, the late great congressman from Long Island, was a product of AI, that he was totally made up. I mean, that's how ludicrous it's become.
Hey, we'll be right back.
But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Oh my, isn't that a pleasant lead in? Yes, I will have a Merry Christmas, and I hope all our listeners will too. Hey, one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other businesses, final segment. You know where to get her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, did you see Sunday's State of the Union with Jake Tapper and Dana Bash on CNN? Well, during one of the show's breaks, a TV commercial warned viewers that a proposal to require too-big-to-fail banks to hold more capital against their riskiest trading practices will, quote, increase the cost of mortgages and car payments and hurt small businesses, making it harder for them to access credit, meet payroll, and run their operations. Well, as explained by Pam and Russ Martins in yesterday's Wall Street on Parade newsletter, the ad featured images of a farmer on his tractor, an auto mechanic, a worried small business owner, and other emotional-packed images. More to the point, the ad's small print said the ad was paid for by the Financial Services Forum. who's the financial services forum? You guessed it. Turns out its elite membership consists of the CEOs of the 8 largest Wall Street banks. Boom. This website says its board of directors is limited to these same 8 CEOs, and its chair and vice chair also rotate exclusively among those 8 CEOs. The warrants tell us that these CEOs rank among the most ridiculously paid executives of publicly traded companies in the country. Of course, there's Jamie Dimon, chair and CEO of JP Morgan Chase, who made a cool $35 million in total comp last year and became a billionaire on the backs of the bank's shareholders, which happens to include many public employee pension funds. As we discussed a few months ago on Financial Survival, the ratio of Dimon's pay to the pay of the median worker at JP Morgan, 393-1 last year. Good to be king. So Martins point out, this isn't a group of people who can genuinely say they're concerned about the welfare of the little guy or gal in America's main streets. With the exception of CEOs of State Street and Bank of New Mellon, this is also the pack of megabanks that blew up Wall Street and the U.S. economy in 2008, leaving millions of those same small businesses and struggling families they profess to care so much about in bankruptcy and foreclosure. At the same time, these banks receive tens of billions of dollars in taxpayer bailouts and secret infusions of trillions of dollars in cumulative loans for 2.5 years from the good old Federal Reserve. Thanks, Martins, for that very important information. Vice chair of the Financial Services Forum is Jane Fraser, CEO of Citigroup. The bank was a financial basket case in 2008 from its risky trading activities and derivatives. It took these bailouts put back up as its publicly traded stock lost 90% of its value and started trading at 99 cents in March 2009. An infusion of $45 billion from the Treasury, a government guarantee of over $300 billion on its, quote, assets, a guarantee of almost $6 billion on its senior unsecured debt, and $26 trillion on its commercial paper and interbank deposits by the FDIC. Oh, and a secret revolving loan from the Fed that cleaned a cumulative $2.5 trillion in below-market rate loans from 2007 to the middle of 2010. What's the condition of Citigroup today, you ask? Well, a November headline said it may slash as many as, 24,000 jobs. Plus, its stock has lost 92% since 2007. The Financial Services Forum describes itself as an economic policy and advocacy organization whose members are the chief executive officers of the 8 largest and most diversified financial institutions headquartered in the U.S. In actuality, as the Martins put it, the majority of these banks are serial lawbreakers with shocking rap sheets and remain the recipients of endless bailouts from the Federal Reserve, unquote. Financial Forum Services Forum also says this on its website. Our banks are strong, stable, and safe. Again, the truth in the eye of the beholder. Listen to these headlines from Wall Street on Parade. From May 9th this year, academic study finds that one of the 4 largest U.S. banks could be at risk of a bank run. On July 6th, large banks have bled $921 billion in deposits since April 2022. And a much larger decline than small banks. And October 9th, International Bank Study using 150 years of data shows megabanks are like the big four in the U.S., produce financial instability and more severe crises. In Friday's What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog, I wrote about another Wall Street on Parade newsletter from last week that reported as of June 30th this year, Goldman Sachs Bank USA had $517 billion in assets and $57 trillion in face amount of derivatives, with risk-based capital of just $55.9 billion. In fact, just four U.S. banks, Goldman, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, and Bank of America, held $193 trillion in derivatives as of June 30th. That's 87% of all derivatives held by commercial banks in the country at the time. As the Martins scratch their heads, if there's any better definition of an insane concentration of risk, I'd sure like to know what it is. Well, the Martins now report that the Financial Services Forum has a propaganda website called AmericansCan'tAffordIt.com. The About section of the website fails to mention that its members consist solely of these eight obscenely paid CEOs of Wall Street's too big to fails, CEOs who have a personal vested interest in getting richer by gutting any regulations that seek to rein in their risky trading, as the Martins say. Congress, if you're listening, let these new regulations take effect at a minimum. And while you're at it, bring back the Glass-Steagall Act. Excuse me. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets, featuring Melody's weekly recap of the markets and Doug Nolan's weekly credit bubble bulletin blog on the Fed's Q3Z1 report. Plus, I have a piece on last Friday's government jobs report indicating that nearly all of November's job growth of 199,000 came from just a few sectors, namely healthcare, government, plus leisure and hospitality. Now, referring to how the Fed's interest rate hikes have helped to cool off the economy, ZipRecruiter chief economist Julia Pollack said, job growth has pretty much ground to a halt in most of the rest of the economy, and that's mostly by design. Well, we've seen this over and over throughout 2023. These three sectors I just mentioned, plus private education employment, are responsible for 81% of all jobs created so far this year. That may help explain why so many Americans are pessimistic about the economy despite an apparent strong labor market. It's likely they don't work in one of the growing sectors. The Labor Department reported on Friday that the economy added 199,000 jobs in November, slightly more than forecast. 83% of those jobs were in healthcare, government, and leisure. Healthcare accounted for 77,000 jobs, 49,000 state and local government jobs were added, and another 40,000 were in leisure and hospitality. An additional 28,000 workers came from manufacturing, mostly auto workers returning from the strikes. Retail trade employment, on the other hand, fell by 38,000, while warehousing and storage was down by 8,000. Be sure, job growth has slowed down compared to earlier this year, but it's still buzzing along, and that's allowing more Americans to enjoy the benefits of tight conditions. The government report showed that across all key metrics, non-farm payrolls, wages, the unemployment rate, the participation rate, and even the work week also exceeded expectations. That's according anyway to Nationwide Chief Economist Kathy Bosjancic, who added it all should help support the consumer spending during the holidays. Well, the economy again added those 199,000 jobs last month, though the prior 2 months were revised down by a combined 35,000. And growth is below the average monthly gain of 240K over the past year, a sure sign of some cooling. The November figures were supported by stronger employment in the auto sector, which increased by 30,000, again, largely because of the end of the UAW strikes. But some analysts say the most encouraging part of the report came from the household survey showing the headline unemployment rate falling 0.2 of a point to 3.7%. That extends a nearly two-year stretch when it's hovered below 4%, the longest since 1968-69. Drop came even as more than 500,000 workers entered or re-entered the labor force, a sign that more workers are still coming off the sidelines, helping to ease labor market tightness. Now, that helps to explain the drop in the government's U6 jobless rate from 7.2% to 7.0%. Remember, that U6 includes discouraged workers who, according to the BLS, are neither working nor looking for work, but indicate that they want and are available for a job and have looked for work sometime in the past 12 months. It also includes people who are available for full-time work but have had to settle for a part-time schedule. I mean, the U6 rate is definitely more reflective of reality, yet it's still rarely mentioned by mainstream economists and media and politicians, probably because it's close to twice as high as the headline U3 rate. Meanwhile, the share of Americans with a job rose to 60.5%. That's the highest since the end of the pandemic. The protracted tightness is illustrated by a strong rebound in average hourly earnings, which rose 0.4% in November compared with the 0.2% increase in October. In fact, over the past 12 months, average hourly earnings have jumped by 4%. And that means wage growth likely outran inflation last month. Well, it did, definitely, at least if estimates that came in today's CPI are correct, meaning workers are achieving real wage gains now. The job market keeps defying expectations of a quick and steep slowdown. Instead, it looks to be cooling in a way that thus far anyway, appears to be lifting hopes of that soft landing. So what does all this mean for the Fed? Well, after several weeks of economic data flashing the all-clear sign, suggesting inflationary pressures are well in check and the economy slowing, well, Friday's job numbers just beg to differ. Combination of a lower unemployment rate and strong growth in average hourly earnings will likely or probably getting the attention of Fed policymakers who are meeting this week and who've been reluctant to proclaim an end to interest rate hikes. I wouldn't even be surprised if one or two of them, we find out tomorrow, voted for another increase. The open question is how the Fed communicates the likelihood of further rate hikes next year and how the door appears to be to rate cuts. Now, while the new job numbers probably aren't a game changer on either front, they give ammo to Fed officials who want a higher rates for longer stance. The numbers certainly reduce the chances of easing rates anytime soon, the job report, that is, seen as increasingly probable in financial markets by next spring, though dismissed by Jerome Powell and other Fed governors. Financial markets reacted accordingly, too. I mean, the two-year Treasury yield, which is highly sensitive to Fed policy expectations, was up, 0.13 percentage points as of Friday at 4.71%. And by mid-morning New York time yesterday, it jumped another half a percentage point to 4.76. Although by late morning today, it had fallen a bit back to 4.72. Fed fund future traders see over a 98% chance the Fed holding rates steady tomorrow and a 40% chance of a 25 or more basis point rate cut beginning in March. It's a crazy time to be a Fed governor, an FOMC policymaker, and more importantly, a good old U.S. of A consumer. Speaking of which, I'm done. You can resume your holiday shopping right now. Just keep your credit cards hidden under your mattress. Hey, it's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. As always, our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye. I have a plan. If I've got me a wealthy